This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Kieran Williams, the Ohio State Prospect Factory, and more with Anand Nanduri of Player Profile here. And you have a really unique story just in terms of a few years ago, you were very much involved, salary cap analyst in the NFL. And I almost wonder, because we see inflated numbers, we see the contract details, and then I hear on SpotRack, you know, them doing a show or somebody actually breaking it down, and it looks far different than the, wow, he's going to start getting $40 million on the, you know, on the cap hit starting next year for one of these quarterbacks. And you see it might take 4 years to actually get to that number, just to have one example there. But just talk about your background a little bit. And then as you've gone to fantasy football end of things, how has that kind of sculpted some of the ways you view contracts and some of the ways you view insulation for these players, or maybe not having insulation around the water cooler here?
Obviously, I'm on an injury. I do a podcast with Matt Kelly, your Player Profile. You may know him as the Podfather. We call it the decision point, where we break down what an NFL GM's job actually is, because it's very different than a head coach. Even though they're kind of seen as side-by-side actors, the methodology that we use to rate them should be very different. A head coach's job is to maximize their talent. A general manager's job is to create an open Super Bowl windows where you have 16. I was a finance bro for a while. Was lucky enough to do some work for the league, specifically salary cap stuff. So well versed in contract structure and kind of how the nitty gritty of contract validation goes down, making sure teams stay under the cap, what the salary cap really is, because I mean, all of you are diehards, you kind of understand it, but casual fans sometimes don't. You know, obviously diehard Rams fan, diehard Buckeyes fan. So excited to get into it today, Chad.
Okay. What do you think about these quarterback windows? You know, like someone like the Bills, they're talking about how they're coming out of it. They had to shed Stephon Diggs, or, you know, they chose to. Mahomes won a Super Bowl despite having his weakest collection of weapons last year in recent memory, or very limited compared to the potential of what could be a big upgrade this year. How do you kind of view quarterbacks and those, you know, just comforts around them when you start seeing them getting paid significantly versus rookie contracts? How do you view that? Because I think that's one of the most significant things in Superflex Dynasty for us is, you know, looking at these windows and maybe a stud guy that maybe won't produce at that level, or maybe someone that's an ideal window to do so.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting to kind of look at how we as dynasty players versus organizations themselves view certain players. You know, Atlanta was willing to give Kirk Cousins a bunch of money to go there and kind of be their quarterback of the current, and then immediately drafting their quarterback of the future at the same time. So that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. That really hasn't been the model for a lot of teams. I know people like to go to Green Bay and talk about the Rodgers and Jordan Love situations, and there have been several others where, you know, someone's been drafted while the guy is already there. Jalen Hurts is a great example of that. But I think the funny part about it is this is a totally unique situation, because you have a free agent that's never taken a snap for this team coming over, and you drafted your QB of the future. I think when you talk about these quarterback windows, they're probably the most important thing to competing long term. Because again, you can win a Super Bowl in an off year. You know, somebody gets hurt that probably should have won a Super Bowl. It's very rare that you win the Super Bowl you're supposed to win. Right. You know, the best team over, you know, the 18-week season versus the team that hoists the trophy at the end is very rarely the same. You saw that with Kansas City this year. I don't think they were the best team over that 18-week stretch. But when you have the guy that wears 15 in KC put on the Superman cape, and, you know, Buffalo is another great example. When you have a Josh Allen, you just need to get him there, and then they've got to string together three or four for you. I think it's super interesting from the dynasty perspective to see how someone like an Anthony Richardson is valued, simply because we've seen the archetype of a Josh Allen. We've seen Jalen Hurts put together really, really productive seasons. We've seen other guys that don't necessarily have the passing numbers to justify where their ranking is in dynasty, but because of the value of the rushing attempts that they have, have and the way that they're deployed in the run game, so much of that value surpasses even somebody like a, you know, potentially like a Joe Burrow, who really doesn't run all that much, but is a true pocket passer. If we're objectively analyzing who do we want at quarterback, there's one over the other. But when you look at the dynasty model, it's a little different.
Yeah, I think that equation of average passer, I've categorized Kyler Murray as this for quite some time, of saying he's an average NFL passer, but then when you put the rushing on top of it, he becomes a strong producer. Anthony Richardson could be a good example of that. Josh Allen, the two examples, and I actually wanted your opinion on this, because when I broke down some of these, you know, early rough around the edges quarterbacks, the two that have panned out are Josh Allen and Jalen Hurts. And the common factor was they continually improved. Their team won, which is a big part and a difference between Justin Fields. And the other part is they improved as a passer, and they had the latitude and timeline to do so because the team was good enough. Am I missing something in this kind of the chain links of the young quarterback? Like Anthony Richardson seems like he's going to have a decent lens. The Colts seem like they're going to be competitive enough. Heck, they were last year with Gardner Minshew. I really like the infrastructure. He seems like he's in the ideal spot to be allowed 2 to 3 years to see how he can grow as a passer, because the rushing will be there and probably the team results will be good enough.
Yeah, I think it's a fascinating question. We have kind of two real archetypes of guys that are coming into the league that people get really excited about. You have your Jaden Daniels, your Michael Penix Juniors of the world that have seen so much college action, especially this crew that you know, kind of had the COVID year and kind of really gave it 2 extra years for some guys. When you have those guys that have just played so much college football, you watch the transition to the NFL, and for them, the learning curve isn't quite as steep. Then you contrast that with guys like an Anthony Richardson that just didn't take a ton of snaps at Florida, but was such a dynamic athlete, and you saw pure passer traits that you think can translate to the next level and really give you leeway. You know, in the same way that the Bills brought Allen along, that's kind of your classic example. And I think that, you know, for most players, it's really unfair to compare them to Josh Allen, because he was the unicorn that did the thing that everybody gets excited about. Everyone's super enthused. Oh, he could be the next Josh Allen. There's not another Josh Allen. But if there was, there's one guy that has the athletic profile to be another Josh Allen, and that's Anthony Richardson. I think Jalen Hurts is a really interesting story, because you look at him freshman year at Bama. For a lot of the people that play Dynasty, you're also watching college football. When you watch him freshman year at Bama, to watch him develop to his sophomore year at Bama, junior year, and then he gets his senior year at Oklahoma, and you watch every single year he progresses as a passer, the concern that you have for Anthony Richardson and that kind of profile, if you're looking at them in that manner, is he going to be able to take enough snaps? Because he didn't get them at Florida. Josh got them at Wyoming. Jalen got them at Alabama and then Oklahoma. Is he going to take enough snaps this year? Can he stay healthy enough? Because I think last year would have been such a great learning experience for him. And I think I'm sure he learned a lot from the sideline, but there are certain things that you can only learn as you're getting hit and chased down by NFL linebackers, because the speed of the game is just that different. Even if you look at SEC versus bad NFL teams, bad right. NFL teams just have better players. They're bigger, stronger, faster, one level up. And so I think that's the thing that I'm most looking at in terms of, you know, these super freak talented rookie quarterbacks and sophomore quarterbacks that we get every year. But specifically speaking about quarterbacks making that jump, there are really three things you have to look at. Are ownership, general manager, head coach aligned on what that timeline looks like? Because Josh Allen was told, hey, buddy, don't do everything all at once right now if you don't see it run. The converse process was applied to Justin Fields, which is, hey, kid, save the city. And I just, who you put around them matters so much. The second thing that I think matters a lot is, does he have a veteran or a dynamic number one receiver that can make his life easy on third downs? You watch this with Pat, even when it wasn't necessarily even Tyreek at the time, but you watch him with Travis Kelce. Third down and whatever, he's just looking for 87 early on in his career. Even though he could make every throw on the field, even though he could do everything, he was just looking for 87. Then that third part becomes, do you have an offensive coordinator that you trust to scheme stuff for them that they do well? You want them to fail But you want them to fail in productive ways when they fail. You don't want them to just fail because the game script was bad. You don't want them to fail because they read something wrong. You want them to fail in ways that you can teach them, not in ways where you have to accept the blame. So I think that's the toughest part of it. All three of the guys, you know, both when you talk about Josh and when you talk about Jalen, the success stories, really good offensive coordinators. That helps in a big, big way.
And supporting them right away, like as much as possible with weapons, right? I mean, that's very important to not just say, you're going to save us, as you kind of mentioned was the stock line there. Justin Fields, they get DJ Moore the very next year. And I actually think it's pretty interesting to ask the question that, you know, if the Bears had the number 9 pick and not the number 1 pick, would Justin Fields be the quarterback? And I think the answer is probably yes. So maybe it isn't all on Justin Fields, you know, because they just had a better option to draft in their eyes, you know, and obviously contractually, right?
Yeah.
Comes into, point of view, resetting the clock.
Yeah. I think resetting the clock was a big point of emphasis. And the other thing too, is Caleb Williams is just, you know, not that Justin Fields wasn't a dynamic athlete. He absolutely is. Caleb Williams, USC team was not Justin Fields, Ohio State squads by any means. I mean, he carried that team. Justin wasn't ever really asked to carry Ohio State. And that's one of the tough things about any of these Ohio State, Alabama, Clemson, you know, take your pick of the upper echelon Georgia quarterbacks as you do the evals, is their lives are made so much easier by the fact that they have better wide receivers than UFDB. And so, yeah, obviously they're not going to win every single game. That's just unrealistic. But 95% of the time they step onto a football field, their supporting cast is better than the team that they're trying to play against. And so that's what makes the evals of these guys difficult, especially when you go to those high-end schools.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Got to ask, because Trey Lance is someone I was chewing around in my head while you were talking for a few minutes here about quarterback. So obviously he had the infrastructure, very limited amount of playing time in college, only saw a smattering of starts in the NFL before they moved on. What do you kind of think of the Trey Lance story? Is he one that had all those pieces in place, all those pillars that you mentioned? Is he someone that should / will get another shot in terms of a dynamic athlete that just, I mean, what, 20 starts maybe? When you talk about since 18 years old, one of the biggest mysteries in terms of has not played like almost any other quarterback we've ever seen, college plus pro, and yet he's already on a new team.
I think the interesting question there for me would be, because I don't think the Niners knew what they had in Brock Purdy. I think anybody would admit that, because you don't take a guy as Mr. Irrelevant if you know what you've got in terms of what he turned into. So I never really thought he was part of the plan. I think once they saw what they had in him, Trey Lance was then made expendable. And obviously they gave up a lot to get him. They really liked him a lot. You know, much has been made of whether it was going to be Mac Jones or Trey Lance. I think anytime you have someone that's that dynamic, you have to feel good about them potentially getting another shot. And I don't think it's going to be, you know, this cozy situation where, you know, he gets traded to a team, they develop him, he gets a shot to start when the incumbent starter. I think it's probably going to be one of those situations where somebody with legitimate playoff aspirations, with a GM that's on an expiring contract or a coach that's on an expiring contract, is trying their best to find a way to get their squad to the playoffs. I think that's probably the most likely angle to which he gets actual starts potentially this year, if not next year. But I do think he's an intriguing option. We just don't have enough data on. What can you sink your teeth into about Trey Lance? One of his starts was in a monsoon. He got hurt in multiple other starts. I mean, we have nothing to go on unless you buy into, you know, the preseason mattering that much. And, you know, there are two sides to the story. There's the guy that you drafted that never got on the field in Trey Lance. There's the guy that you drafted that never got on the field until situation, you know, was probably suboptimal last year in Jordan Love's spot. And he succeeded basically anyway. The receivers were young. And, you know, it was kind of a make it or break it year for him. And that's the success story that you're kind of looking at. In one way is, you know, Jordan Love got to sit, got to learn. If Trey Lance's, you know, injury history kind of gives him that same situation where he's learning from really good QBs and really good offensive coordinators and head coaches. I think, you know, when you look at organizations, Dallas and San Francisco are two of probably the best spots that you could be in. So it's tough for me to sit here and say that I think that his career is over by any means. It's just, I don't think there's a true pathway to start unless you get into like a Sam Darnold in Minnesota early this year versus JJ situation.
Okay. One of your close interests there is the Rams. And I wanted to ask, because I've gotten a bunch of different answers, I would love your take on what you thought about Kieran Williams as last season was progressing. And then the Blake Corum draft pick heard around the world, the third round pick there for the Rams this year. What does that mean? Were they merely upgrading everything else that went chaotically when they didn't have Kieran Williams in the lineup? Is this someone that's going to form more of a committee, even though Sean McVay normally goes for the foundational back usage typically? What do you kind of see in terms of this playing out short-term and also long-term there for the Rams backfield?
I think that the way that Sean saw Todd Gurley's career end, even though when he was the engine of the offense for a while, I think that really sticks with him. I think he kind of realized if you have two guys that you really trust, it was Daryl Henderson and Sony Michel for a while. It was, you know, they've had batches of guys, CJ Anderson for a minute. They've had batches of guys in there where they trust the running back to carry the load. But if you have someone that you can rotate in there that you feel good about having the same skill set, then even if Kyron has to miss 2 or 3 weeks, I think Blake Corum can handle all of that and then some. If I'm looking this year, obviously, I think it's very difficult to discount what Kyron did. It's also hard to not talk about the draft capital that Blake Corum got. Personal opinion is I think they'll probably end up somewhere in like a 70-30 snap share. If both are healthy all year, which, you know, again, that's the toughest part of this to figure out, right, is especially running back, how healthy are you going to be? But I still think it's Kyron Williams' job until it isn't. But I do think Blake Corum sees significant snaps. I absolutely think his dynasty ranking is justified. I think, you know, the hype surrounding him where he was drafted is justified. It's just Kyron Williams has already done it. So, you know, it's tough to go against a guy that finished, what, RB2 last year? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's tough to go against that guy.
It's crazy to see two running backs in the same backfield, both in the top 20 for Dynasty. It kind of makes sense here, because if you tell me right now Blake Corum gets 5 clarified starts in the landscape beyond the top guys in at the running back position, it probably warrants running back 18, 19, 20 to get 5 clarified starts in that offense if Kieran Williams is not around this year, because that's going to be high level. Either guy clarified. One thing, you said 70-30. That would be, you know, probably soften the upside there for Kieran Williams, who's an absolute workhorse last year. So that might soften the ability to, you know, rival McCaffrey or some of these other high level, you know, pretty unquestioned guys. Maybe there is a little bit more of a question there in terms of the ultimate workload, and maybe they soften that a little bit.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to kind of see Kyron be the guy and then they'll rotate, you know, Blake in for a full series and just kind of give him, you know, 3-1, 2-3, 2-1, right, however they want to do it each game. Just because it is such a tough position. The Rams do like to do a lot of things where, you know, Puka was asked to come in and play blocker. Cooper Kupp, same thing. They asked Benny Skowronek to do that a lot. You're asked to play multiple roles, even as a, you know, as a running back. You're asked to be a blocker for, you know, fly sweeps and to, you know, basically be an extension of the run game as a pass catcher. And there's a lot that they ask you to do. And so again, for Kyron to pick that up as quickly as he did and be the back that he was last year, I just think, as great as I think Blake Corum is and will be, I just think it's going to be really tough for him, barring injury, to really eat into that snap share. But I do think that they learned last year, hey, we don't want one guy handling the ball 85% of the time. We've got to find some way to mix it up. And even if it's drafting a player that we think is relatively similar, we'll go ahead and do it just so we have someone with tread on the tires late in the fourth quarter when we need to grind these games out.
Two huge running back prospects coming out of Ohio State, both eligible for next year. Trevion Henderson's had some injuries, and he's going to be coming back for his senior season. They add Quinshon Judkins out of Ole Miss there. So he was a major recruit, producer last year that now, again, they've always had strong run game there with the Buckeyes. How familiar are you with both of those guys, especially Judkins coming in as a transfer, and Henderson not coming out last year is a little bit of a suspect group running back wise. We did see Jonathan Brooks go in the top 50, but Trevion Henderson was projected to be right there as running back one potentially. It's a crowded class next year projected. What do you kind of think of those two guys, and probably the most dynamic duo we've seen in Ohio State for some time?
Yeah, I think that's probably, I don't think it's over the top to say that's probably the most dynamic running back duo Ohio State's ever had in the same backfield for a year. What Judkins did tearing up the SEC, I mean, Ole Miss last year, one of the real success stories in college football, period. I think that was their best season ever. I think that was their first 11-win season ever. Judkins was the engine that made that go. I think they had a lot of really, really solid producers across that entire team. But to add him to room, I think Trey's biggest problem was he wanted that one big season where, you know, he clearly established himself as RB1. And you can ask any Buckeye fan, we love the kid so much. We think that he has so much to offer the team. You know, he was spelled by Chip Traynham for a little bit last year. He was spelled by other guys at different points, various points of the year, Dallin Hayden. But, you know, it's anytime you have two backs like that, that can basically, either of them can hit a home run on any play. They're both really, really tough guys to bring down. They finish through contact well. They're both adept pass catchers. I think it's the question that everybody wants answered is, you know, who's RB1, who's RB2? I think Chip Kelly coming in as the OC will tell you that he's going to run whoever, whenever he sees fit. So I think it's beneficial to both of them. Quinshon, I think, transferred, you know, a lot of people have made discussions about how it's NIL related, and I'm sure that's played a big part in it. But the other side of it too is, if your lifetime earnings in the NFL are really, as a running back, like, we have to find a way to get to that second contract money. If you're Quinshon Judkins, you're trying to preserve all the tread on your tires, and what could be better for your, you know, for your NFL future than tying yourself to an offensive coordinator that has the cachet to, you know, create Heisman caliber seasons out of a LaMichael James, but also a running back mate in Trey Henderson, where you don't have to do all of it yourself. So I think everyone kind of wins there. I was very surprised to see Trey come back, but, you know, I think he really wants that RB1 season that pushes him to the top of that group. Cause you ask any of these guys, they're all competitors. They think they're the best running backs in the country, no matter who you ask.
Yeah. He certainly will be in the running. It's a really good running back crop, opposite of this year where we're kind of scrambling to get, you know, guys in the second round. There's a lot of guys that have arguments to be in the first round next year. We'll see if the NFL actually pulls the trigger there. That's always TBD. One final question, and I'm going to have this open-ended, kind of a potpourri question for the wide receiver factory that is Ohio State. You know, after Michael Thomas, we had a bit of a swoon there, but man, you stack Olave, Garrett Wilson, Jackson Smith-Njigba, we're still waiting. Marvin Harrison Jr. goes in the top five. And the list and the hits keep on coming for what's in the Devy pipeline right now. So it could be all the way out to Jeremiah Smith, anything in between. What kind of stands out? What are some nuggets you have from just tracking this program that's becoming such a pipeline at the position?
Yeah, I think, you know, Jeremiah Smith obviously is we had some people that are in South Florida that do some recruiting stuff for 24/7 tell us that he's the best high school wide receiver, and some said even best high school player they've ever seen. And anytime you have people going to that level of non-hyperbole, it's probably time to listen. And nothing I've heard out of Columbus has changed any of that. I think Emeka Ikpuka kind of just flies under the radar. There is an element of a pseudo Michael Thomas arc there where he's just producing and producing and producing. And it seems like, you know, he's always overshadowed by somebody at, you know, at Ohio State, it was really Devin Smith that did a lot of that early on. And, you know, there've been several others. It was Paris Campbell for a while. Bryson and Noah Rogers were both there at Ohio State last year. Carnell Tate, people are super excited about Brandon Ennis. I think when you kind of look at how all of these guys go, like Julian Fleming was a five-star top five player in his class. And for him to transfer to Penn State, basically to get playing time after being a starter this past year, tells you just how deep that room is and just how competitive that room is. I don't think I've ever seen anything like it. And kind of the run starting with, Chris Olave and Garrett through what they've had now, that room is just psycho competitive. Every year you've got future NFL first round draft picks everywhere. They're all really, really good players. But Devy pipeline wise, obviously Brandon Ennis, Carnell Tate are two guys that I think, you know, whoever gets on the field the most this year and kind of makes that impact to kind of be opposite Emeka. And I think Jeremiah is going to get out there some too. But they're looking at, you know, so many of those guys. Jaden Ballard is another one. There's just so many in that room. You've got four-star after five-star after four-star, and they're all ridiculous. But when it comes to kind of figuring out what their NFL futures look like, specifically from a Devy pipeline situation, I think it's pretty clear that Jeremiah Smith is your, you know, Julio Jones level, Amari Cooper, that guy's wide receiver one in his class. At least that's what we've been seeing so far. There are really good DBs at Ohio State that look real silly trying to play against them. But you know, obviously the hype on that has already been there. So those would be my two, Ennis and Carnell Tate are the two guys that I would be looking at long-term. Not that people haven't heard of them yet. They've been all over the place. They're five stars. They're, you know, very
don't
highly
forget
recruited,
about them.
But yeah, don't forget about them in the whole Emeka Ikpuka, Jeremiah Smith hype.
Excellent. Anand Nanduri, thank you so much for coming on, sharing your time and talents and backstory, as well as now your Dynasty and Devy knowledge here. Where can folks find you, and what's some of the content you would like to highlight as we go through and push towards week one here?
Yeah, so Matt and I host that show called The Decision Point. It's not on a schedule. I wish it was, but we just don't have the time between the two of us to really put a schedule on it. So it drops whenever it drops. That's Roto Underworld podcast feed. At Nanduri NFL on Twitter, X. I don't really call it X, but on Twitter. You can find me over there. And, you know, I don't have like my own YouTube channel or anything, but most of my stuff can be found on Player Profiler. And, you know, I love doing guest spots on stuff like this. So wherever you can find me, man, happy to chat with whoever, whenever we have time, which we have a little bit of downtime this time of year, but man, it feels like SFB is right around the corner and then Canton's right around the corner and we're right back to it.
Excellent stuff. As you said, Dynasty never sleeps. Dynasty never stops. So that's one thing, that little reprieve here in June, July, but man, it comes at us fast in August. We got a fire hose going on. Thank you so much for coming on. As I mentioned, I am Chad Parsons. Until next time, never settle, refuse to be average, and keep building those dynasties.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.